Hello. On this podcast, we talk about movies, their faults, their flaws, and their plots. So, expect some spoilers.
You've been warned.
Welcome to Plot Spackle.
I'm John, and my first fighting game was Mortal Kombat.
I'm Eric, and my first fighting game was Street Fighter 2.
I'm Richard, and my first fighting game was Clay Fighter.
That's a unique one. That one didn't get a franchise, though, did it?
Yes, it did.
It did, actually.
There's more?
Yes, there's more. There's two on the N64.
Huh.
And then it got a re-release in, like, 2010.
Besides the holes of my knowledge, we got some plot holes we're going to be filling today.
And what are we using to fill those plot holes with?
Bison bucks.
How much are they worth?
It's not about how much they're worth. It's how much you're willing to pay for them.
I don't think I can use this as acceptable tender.
You can in Monopoly. As we are talking today about Street Fighter, the 1994 movie about the Street Fighter 2 game, which makes Eric the expert, as he's played Street Fighter 2. It was his formative fighting game, so he's going to know the most about it.
Wait, what? I played it at my friend's house.
And you dug into the deep lore, right? You read through every item description.
You're like, before I pick a character, I want to know their story. What's their plot line? Who's a good guy? Who's a bad guy?
Before you like went and you unlocked the shortcut that led back to the next bonfire, and
that's an entirely different series. I think we're confusing Eric, which is fine because it's now time for him to explain what happens in this movie.
Yeah, it's time for me to confuse you with my poor plot synopsis. So, the Street Fighter movie, like John said, is a movie loosely based off of the Street Fighter 2 video game that was extremely popular during this time frame. The movie follows Guile, because apparently he was the star of the series. I don't know. From what I understand, it was Ken and Ryu who were the main protagonists.
Isn't it Ryu?
Ryu, I've heard it both ways. Don't they pronounce it in the movie? Anyways, besides the point.
All right, well, keep going with the story.
So, okay, not to get a little bit meta here, but I was really disappointed with this movie. You know, it's named Street Fighter, but there was, in fact, very little fighting in streets. I mean, sure, there were gunfights in streets and, like, cage fights next to the street, but no actual fighting in streets. You know, I felt it was, you know, false advertising.
All right. Does this movie have a good guy, bad guy?
So, okay, get back into it. We have Guile, who is played by Jean-Claude Van Damme, a famous Belgian playing a famously American character in this movie. He is hunting down our main antagonist, M. Bison, who has decided, you know what? I think I need my own country. So the UN sends in a crack force of people holding or wielding pistols against Bison's army. And they decide, you know what? Let's go take him on. Throughout that, we have our main protagonists, Ryu and Ken, who are gun runners and are deciding, you know what? Let's swindle from the M. Bison group. They get caught in their swindle and, through a convoluted plan, end up joining forces with M. Bison just for a bit, mostly so they're not killed. Well, lots of fights happen. Let's skip forward to the end of the movie. Lots of fights happen. M. Bison is killed, brought back, then killed again. And everyone decides to do a freeze frame at the end of the movie.
So you can select your character.
Apparently.
Or so that you can see what they do in their victory pose at the end of the game.
See, I didn't even know what the victory poses were of...
Here, you played Street Fighter 2 and you don't know everything about it?
Apparently not. You know, I mean, I think they're on Street Fighter 5 now, after re-releasing Street Fighter 2 for like the last 20 years.
I mean, that means you should be extra familiar with it. You've had 20 years to learn this.
I didn't play during those 20 years, though.
Well, neither did I. I was going to put all this pressure on you.
Listen, I am not David Bowie, nor Freddie Mercury. I do not handle pressure well.
Well, what about, like, The Cure?
If we don't have video game facts, might as well have movie facts.
And we have facts aplenty about this movie. It was released on the 23rd of December, 1994, which makes this a Christmas film by anyone's definition.
No, it's not by a Christmas film by my definition.
But it was released on the 23rd of December, John. It can't get much more Christmas than that.
See, I think if there's going to be a Christmas movie, though, it needs to release, like, right after Halloween.
Yeah, or November, late, definitely. Late November.
I'd say early November, because this was before, like, home video sales would, you know, boost your profits. So you definitely had to start earlier.
Or, you know, the day before Christmas Eve.
Yeah, but there's no Christmas in this movie. And that's what really makes it a Christmas movie.
Wouldn't that be Christmas?
That's only if you're trying to keep Christmas in your heart, John.
That's what every Christmas movie is about. It is the definition of a Christmas movie.
Well, this movie was released shortly before Christmas in 1994. It had a budget of $35,000. And theaters...
$35,000?
Oh, no, $35 million.
It's like, dang, that is...
Words are hard. Sorry, guys.
All right, $35 million sounds a lot better.
$35 million. They would have blown through that in just Jean-Claude Van Damme's cocaine budget in like 3 weeks, if it was $35,000. But it opened on that Christmas weekend, and guess how much money it made?
$10.
It made more than 10.
$35,000.
Nope, it made a full $6.8 million.
That is definitely less than That is definitely less than $35 million.
$35 million? Yes, it is. By the end of its run in the U.S., it had made its way all the way up to $33 million. It almost paid for its own initial budget. But it has since gone on to get about $99 million in cumulative worldwide sales.
Eventually they made money.
They did.
Now, question. They did make a video game tie-in for this movie. So we have Street Fighter the movie, the video game. Is that counted in the gross sales? Because it's technically...
Probably not.
I would consider it advertising.
Yeah, but that's more merchandising.
Merchandising, that's right.
I think they count it differently. This is specifically sales in the movie. It's a lot harder to calculate merchandising.
I would say merchandising is a lot easier. Take X amount of product.
Yeah, but you have to have... What's their products? Because there's also going to be action figures. Probably a tie-in book. Maybe a short-release comic book series.
Do you count the TV series that also starred... Colonel Guile as the main character?
I mean, do we count any tie-in products?
I don't know. We'll have to see. I'm going to look up and see how much
merchandising there actually was.
How much Street Fighter II, the movie, the game, made.
Okay.
All right.
And while you look that up, I can tell you some interesting things about the movie. Right at the beginning, we're talking about a Southeast Asian country by the name of Shadaloo, and it starts with the phrase, "Good morning, Shadaloo." And that character was actually voiced by Adrian Kronauer, the actual guy who did the radio armed forces DJ in Vietnam that was the Good Morning Vietnam radio show. They were going to have all of the helicopters assault M. Bison's compound, but Thailand didn't want to have that many airplanes and aircraft in their airspace.
Oh. So that's why they went with boats instead?
And that's why they had to change it to boats instead, which does make some of the stealth boat stuff make a little bit more sense when you think they were trying to do it with an airplane.
A stealth copter.
Yeah. And Raul Julia is noted to have had a really good time playing this role. His son was a fan of Street Fighter 2, and that's why he wanted to get into it. And he went all in on being this bad guy.
He did go all in.
He studied a bunch of various dictators and just made sure to include as much from evil people as he possibly could, including a clown painting done in the style of John Wayne Gacy.
Just in the background.
Just there for you to look at and go, wait a minute, why is there a clown painting here? Why does it look like the clown paintings done by a serial killer? That's creepy.
The spoiler is that it almost was. Any more facts here? There's just...
I mean, there's
just... How deep do you want to go?
Yeah, we can go with all of the... you noted that the American character was represented as an American in the movie, but was played by a Belgian. But we could talk about how there was a Japanese character in the game that is a Japanese-American character in the movie who is played by a Chinese-American actor. Or how there was the Anglo-Indian character who is being played by a Cherokee actor, and... It all gets real weird when you try to compare the video game character to movie character to actor nationality. It's a mess.
I finally got that about the... I'm like, they didn't have the guy with the stretchy arms, but I mean, that would probably be really hard to convey on screen. But no, they just changed him to American Indian, I guess. That's what you're saying.
Well...
No, he was the doctor.
The doctor is going to be the guy that gets the stretchy arm powers. That's why he's wearing, like, the ring around him the whole time.
Oh. He's starting to catch on.
No, he didn't get... Sagat was the Indian, is Indian, but he's being played by a Cherokee, and...
All sorts of interesting fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And this movie, much like many movies with budget issues, had a lot of production problems. Like... You know, Jean-Claude Van Damme burning through what the director said in an interview in 2018 was $10,000 worth of cocaine a week. And refusing to come out of his room, just being drunk on set most of the time.
I just thought that was a silly accent. I didn't realize he was an alcoholic.
It's a little bit of both. I feel like maybe... Instead of having Jean-Claude Van Damme, they should have used Arnold Schwarzenegger. But he was probably too big of an actor at that point. But I think an early Arnold Schwarzenegger would have made a great Guile. You know, still have the Austrian accent and still claim to be American.
Well, I mean, he did a citizenship test. Of course he's American.
Yeah, and so that works. I respect that. I don't respect Jean-Claude Van Damme. If he's not going to take interest in the character and have fun. All right. Are we ready to move beyond the facts and get to the plot holes?
Can we say no and just go home?
You can't, Eric. You can't. We can, but you can't.
Oh, I guess we'll get to the plot holes. The real reason people come to this podcast, I guess.
All right. So, guys.
Our plot holes this time are coming off of a list put out by Screen Rant, because nobody had bothered to put together a list before them.
But, you know, it's good to see that someone else is just watching these old movies randomly.
Sorry, I just looked at the... this article was published on the 16th of March, 2021. I thought this would have been an older list.
Right?
No, this is brand new.
That's why I was commenting about how he probably didn't know that CRT monitors would kill you.
So, all right. First issue. because most of these aren't actually plot holes. So,
well, once we hit like eight, once we get through the first two, we get into things that could be considered plot holes.
So we'll probably, I'll probably forget, but if you happen to search this on the website, the first two issues he has are, there's no, absolutely no tournament. So why should these fighters be coming here?
I mean, I understand that it's a gripe about your tournament fighting video game and that there's not a fighting tournament in the movie, but it doesn't actually leave a hole in the plot of the film.
Yeah, yeah. I think the bigger question is to ask yourself why Street Fighter so often has these tournaments, which is how people resolve their conflicts from outside the tournament. Because isn't that what everyone's backstory is? Because it's never from events within the tournament. It's all about, you know, we come into this tournament for this reason so you can get the prize and maybe fight this guy.
Being the guy who was the first to play Street Fighter, I guess, I don't know. I didn't even know, like, they had backstories. I thought, I just picked them off their colors.
He just wanted to get to the scene at the end where you could blade up the car.
The bonus round?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there we go. There's no tournament, no plot hole.
The second one that they list is that Ken and Ryu are running guns as hustlers and swindlers, and that their characters in the video games are the good guys and they would not do this. Unfortunately, this is not the video game, and these characters, Ken and Ryu, for the movie, do these things. We see them do these things. It is noted in their character that they do these things. Not a plot hole. Moving on to the first one that could actually be considered one.
Why does Guile bust the cage fight? After being exposed as frauds, Ken and Ryu are taken by Saget to the cage fight, where they're scheduled to compete against Vega, mostly so Saget can kill them in the ring, give them some torture, when Guile busts in with an armored vehicle and arrests everyone. But why is he doing this if he's trying to get Saget as that's who he was after, from tenuous connections with M. Bison?
And why would he come after them at a cage fight, which, instead of where Saget is known to be, at his compound?
Well, because Saget was already at the cage fight.
Yeah, he was there. Like,
that was where they decided to do the meeting. And it kind of implies to me also that this cage fight isn't, like, actually 100% Saget's. Like, this is his, like, a different location of his, so it's not as secure. So, you know, you bust in and arrest him where he's weak and vulnerable.
You mean you don't want to assault a Gunrunner Warlord's compound?
No.
When you could arrest him at a less well-secured, quote-unquote, sporting arena?
Yeah.
We'll call it Blood Sporting Arena. How about that?
Yeah, that's true. They weren't in for the legitimate sportsmanship here. There's guys with bear claws on and you know, just blood sport.
I mean, the technique was flawless. Let's give them that. But, I mean, 10 out of 10 for entrails.
Yeah, you just come in and bust the guy while he's enjoying some entertainment. And he has a few bodyguards and the basic security they're going to have. But then there's a whole bunch of other people. And you just block the entrance with your armored vehicle. And where are they going?
Yeah, like how... So you mentioned a whole bunch of just randos in there. Who's to say Guile didn't mix in some soldiers undercover just to facilitate the arrest?
Plus, why not just arrest all of these people? As they probably all have some kind of connection to underground crime, gun running, drugs, something that you can arrest these people on.
I mean, and if you're running off of some good information, you know that Vega and Saget have this, like, very close connection that Vega never fights unless Saget is there, and they have the schedule. They know, oh, he's fighting, Saget's there, let's bust him. bonus if they knew that Ken and Ryu were fakes. And so they knew that they wouldn't have real guns on the compound or in the space at the time. Just make it so much easier for the bad guy to surrender. It's the easiest thing. Of course, you end up in the Shadaloo prison system, and that's not great. All right, what's our next plot hole?
So the next plot hole is number 7. Why is Guile still under a sheet? So, to set this scene up, there is a prison break, and Ken shoots Guile in the stomach with a gun, obviously. But Guile's, in fact, wearing what are called squibs, or just blood exploding blood packs, and he plays dead. In fact, he plays dead so well that he ends up in the morgue hours later, still under the death sheet that everyone gets covered with once when they die in the movies. So the question is, if he was still alive and he was planning for this prison attack to happen, which he was, I don't think I explained that earlier, but why was he still waiting in the morgue with a sheet over his head?
He wanted to take a nap.
Maybe as part of the squibs, though, blowing up, like, or shooting out, he was injected with a tranquilizer so he could more convincingly play.
Oh, so he would limp? Go limp?
Go limp, and it's just, yeah, he's definitely dead.
Yeah, they cart him into the morgue, let him lay there, and they don't have to take anything off. It's part of the make it look real. The less people actually involved in the plan, the easier it is to pull off. It looks like you're going to get the a mole or something. So yeah, just go in, rolls in the morgue. They take the appropriate pictures to get the story going. And then they'll get back to him when he starts to wake up. Probably got something to monitor how he's doing. And I'll be honest, I think he was sleeping. I mean, they probably told him he can sleep when he dies.
And so he did.
I mean, that makes sense. That's like...
And then, yeah, he's relaxing and just kind of taking a nap. He realizes Chun-Li's in there and he's like, you know what? I'm going to scare her. I'm going to freak out whoever else is in here.
As it is noted that he has a thing against reporters.
All right. Next up.
All right. Up next is Honda and Balrog and why they're working with Chun-Li. Because, again, they have issues with their plot, with their relationships from the video games, but in this particular one, they're working together as posing as a journalist team, and when Ken and Ryu are confronted by them, they talk about how M. Bison's Shadaloo Tong destroyed his reputation as a sumo wrestler, and Balrog confirms that the same is true of his boxing career. And the question is why? What business does the Shadaloo Tong have in mundane and pointless conflicts?
Money.
Fixing fights. Money laundering, probably. Like, yeah, you make a big bet. Like, hey, I need you to take a fall on this one. But because they're honorable, they're going to say, no, I'm not going to fail. I'm not going to throw this fight.
Yeah, and every fighter who doesn't want to take the cut of pay and work with you is a fighter you don't want in the ring. So you destroy their reputation because you need money if you're a like terrorist organization. And it's not like you can get it through legit means.
But and if you happen to win it on a long odds bet.
And I also say, you know, the thing about M. Bison is he's got a real fixation on like real fighters. And maybe he's just not impressed with Balrog and Honda. Like, he looks at him and says, you guys aren't real fighters. Let's just destroy your reputation, get you out of the ring, because I don't respect you. Because I am petty and have my little bizarre sticking points. Because that's the kind of character M. Bison is. Clearly. Did you want to add to that, Richard?
Yes. I would bring up that M. Bison doesn't just have a thing for fighters. Because the first thing we are introduced is him confronting other soldiers going, you came all this way to fight me, now's your chance, hand-to-hand combat. And he just destroys them. He cares about hand-to-hand combat and probably happens to not like them. He's like, nope, get rid of them.
He is also certifiably insane. Like, he is very much a slave of his whims and whatnot. So, yeah.
It's, I think it's a whole combination of factors. All right. Well, how about this? So, Ken and Ryu encounter Chun-Li, Honda, and Balrog and find out about their plan. And she reveals her plan to them, that they're planning on blowing up this camp in 10 minutes. And rather than, you know, getting out of the camp, they go back into the tent where Saigot and Bison are having the showdown over payment. You know, where Bison tried to pay off with Bison Bucks, which is a made-up currency that has no value.
But it will have value eventually.
Yeah, it'll one day have value. It's like a Dogecoin.
They laughed. I don't know how much it's worth now. Probably a dollar from the...
Still less than a dollar.
Oh, it's still less than a dollar.
But, yeah. Bringing it back to the movie, they have no reason to go back into the, like, hornet's nest here. They should just run away before everything explodes.
And be captured by the bison guards? Wouldn't it be better to run away after the confusion causing explosion?
But it would be also not be better to not go into the tent where the explosion is going to happen.
Yeah, they're going into ground center here. Or ground zero.
I mean, they're just that good a martial artist. They can deal with it.
I think their plan was that they were still trying to get in. Like, at this point, they are still trying to get in with some kind of criminal organization because they want to pay out somewhere. And somebody was going to get the money, either Saigot or Bison. And all they have to do is show up and get one of them to pay.
And then get out.
And then they can get out and have their payday and retire.
So instead, it's really they're running on a 10-minute timer to get their money and run.
And that's why they had to go back in, is because they're still trying to get their payday at this point. Like, by the end of the film, they found something worth fighting for. But right now, they're still the same hustlers that were trying to sell fake guns to a warlord.
Sell fake guns to a gunrunner.
Not a good plan.
I mean, it kind of worked, didn't it?
Until they were captured and not paid.
Yeah, but see, when they went in first, Saigot was planning on not paying them and killing him with their own guns that he stole off the ship. That just didn't work because they were toy guns.
Well, would he have tried to kill them if they were real guns? Like, okay, these people honor their commitments.
Probably not.
Well, we'll never know now, will we?
Nope. But yeah, I agree. I think they just wanted to get paid.
At least Ken did. That was his main character.
Either build reputation, because maybe one will survive.
Mm-hmm.
If they help one escape,
then they have a friend and a reputation and probably got paid.
And it might also have been part of their plan here, because as much as they're against M. Bison, what they really need to do is they're trying to work for Guile. And if Bison explodes there, then Guile doesn't get to the base, doesn't save the hostages. They don't get their freedom. Like, they'll still be wanted. So that might have been their plan, is to try and save Bison so they can get in with Bison better to get to the base. Might be why they're so quick to sell out Chun-Li.
I could see that as well. Because Guile was in it specifically to try and save his friend.
All right, next plot hole then. So, how did Bison capture Chun-Li? You guys brought it up, maybe that solves it. So after Chun-Li, Balrog, and Honda roll an explosive-laden truck into Bison's encampment and detonate it, the entire place goes wild. In the midst of all this, the audience can hear Bison screaming at his minions to seek out and apprehend Chun-Li and her team. So, So Chun-Li went in with this blazing truck and didn't think of a way to get out?
I think she was hoping that the plan would work in the first place and explode everything.
Yeah, she was hoping that the main leaders behind everything were going to be dead, disrupt a chain of command, possibly that if at all possible, the Allied Nations Task Force was going to be closer so that they could have, like, guile and a military response as well, so that they could just get out and undercover of all of that on top of it.
Now, as for why she would reveal the whole plot, it's part of the whole thing with revenge.
Revenge is a dish best served cold.
Revenge is a dish best served. It's not really revenge if you just do it to them. They have to know that you're doing it to them. That's the whole deal. I mean, if she just blows it up, she'll never be able to rub it in Bison's face that she won in the end.
If a bird poops on your car, you're sad that a bird poops on your car. But if somebody comes up and tells you that they're the ones who made the birds poop on your car, then you're furious.
Yeah, so I feel like it's she wanted to send a message. So for how Chun-Li got caught, because that was the first question, I assume it was by soldiers with guns.
The people guarding the perimeter and people who are probably paid to notice cars being lit on fire.
Like, she got chased down and was in a compromised situation. And rather than try and fight her way out stupidly and getting shot, she said, "I surrender." Because she's like, I can get out of handcuffs, shackles. I can probably pick locks. She's better off captured than she is running from people who are trying to shoot her.
Plus, I mean, as we see later on in the film, getting caught might have been her backup plan, because if the exploding truck didn't kill M. Bison, she was going to do it by kicking him to death.
Anyways.
All right, back to our plot holes.
Anyway, plot hole.
Plot hole.
There is a stealth boat. And in order to get the jump on Bison, Guile runs a stealth boat up a river channel in an attempt to stay under the radar. Now, the premise itself is sound, but their stealth mechanism seems to negatively affect Guile as well as Cammy and T-Hawk for no apparent reason. And then it turns them invisible, but it doesn't actually hide their wake. And then he starts shooting all of the
radar stations,
which sets off alerts in the base that alert Bison to their presence. How stealth boat stealth in any way?
Well, first, let's solve the radar tower. I think he's going there to make it so he doesn't see the reinforcements showing up.
Yeah, he wants them to not know how big of a force they're actually dealing with. So that's the whole, he's got to destroy the stealth towers. Maybe a minigun with exploding rounds isn't the best option there, I'll admit. But at this point, he is kind of running unfunded and unauthorized. Really, Guile is just shooting from the hip with this entire plan.
I do like that the stealth boat did have his name printed on it.
Well, that, I mean,
That's how you know it's his.
Yep. He was the pilot. Captain? Skipper? I don't know.
He was...
How would you classify the person who drives the boat?
His title was officially captain in the movie.
So, yes, he was a captain. Captain Guile. But
it's like saying that you're a doctor when you're actually a doctor of philosophy versus, like, a medical doctor.
He was driving the boat.
We'll see. Maybe
they are still called pilots.
He is a captain the whole way.
We'll have to look at this Venn diagram, but let's move on.
So yeah, that was destroying the radar was the plan, because it's more about getting the rest of the troops in so they can have an unknown force coming in rather than the known force.
All right, then why do you have a boat that turns invisible but doesn't hide the wake?
I think they could blame it on a really aggressive hippo. Hippos can, like, swim at 30 miles an hour.
I'm wondering if maybe the boat can go wakeless, but it can't go wakeless fast. And they need to go fast.
I mean, all boats can go wakeless, not fast. That's kind of the,
yeah, but
the
I point mean, still, of a no wake still like zone. A medium speed, whereas they want to just go quickly, quick enough to hit all the towers in a short period of time. Because they managed to take out two really quick. So I think that's what's going on. And they just didn't know that Bison had cameras set up along the riverbank.
I mean, who does?
That's just a weird thing for Bison to be doing.
Maybe he's an avid bird watcher.
Maybe he's a fish watcher.
Why would you put cameras on top of the water to watch fish, though?
Only when they jump out.
But a lot of fish
he don't likes jump. The challenge.
That's true. He does like challenges.
He likes to sit there, watch the water, and say, I bet there's a fish there.
Throw the dynamite. Let's see.
And then they catch the fish on the shore, dead fish that float up.
Oh, it's catch and release.
That's where they're killed by the dynamite.
That's what goes into, like, the company rations.
But, oh, wait. But we also know that this whole system is connected to his control console. And it's connected to the mines.
Oh, yeah, the automatic mines that you have to press buttons to use.
So is it part of his game where he sees how far the random fishermen can make it down the river channel?
Possibly.
The impoverished fishermen specifically?
Yes, because this is the kind of person M. Bison is.
Oh, what are those boats called in China? The little tut-tuts or the fishermen boats that are... I can't remember what they're called. Dang it.
Now, you can make up any word for this because it's actually in Shandalu.
And it's not China, obviously. It's not a real country, but...
So they have a different word for their little tiny boat. But it's a tiny boat, basically. Mm-hmm. One fisherman in his tiny boat just trying to catch these fish, and suddenly the water explodes.
I could see I'm Bison doing it. He was crazy.
So there. I think that we've answered destroying the radar, why there's the wake. Oh, for how it affects them negatively. I assume it's projecting some sort of electrical field. And maybe they didn't bring the right gear like they were supposed to, because the plan was accelerated when they were fired, basically.
When they were told, you can't do any of this, so they were just like...
Well, let's go now.
Load up onto the boats, we're taking what we've got.
So I think it's something like that.
Okay.
An experimental, there's some sort of electrical field. It's uncomfortable. Maybe more so if you're not grounded.
It's probably the same thing with the pilots who fly the SR-71 Blackbird. Like, they had to have literal pressure suits to keep them from dying.
I mean, you know, those planes are also built to be at that speed. They leak on the ground because everything aligns at high speed, but doesn't line up at low speed.
Yeah, because of the friction, it heats up the metal plates on the outside of the plane, but you can't have them connected on the ground, or else the plane will break up. So you know what? It's just worth throwing away, like, gallons and gallons of fuel.
The SR-71 Blackbird is a really cool airplane, though.
Not this podcast, though, but ooh, we should do stealth next, and then we can just talk about the SR-71 Blackbird.
But, all right, what's our next plot hole? What about choice of weapons? Yeah, so I know when you're going on a stealth mission, you want to pack light, but look at these guys. They're literally running around with their sidearms into a base with people who are packing Rambo-level weaponry. I mean, this is not... As you think, it just seems to be poor planning, not very insightful. They're bringing a pistol to automatic weapons, grenade launcher fight.
See, that's real. This is actually really easy to explain away, John. All the main characters have two registered weapons, Lefty and Righty.
Or you look at the rest of the assault force, and they do have those guns. They showed up in the same boats they left in, as opposed to ones that got blown up by M. Bison playing, how do I blow up this fisherman game?
But are you saying that maybe they had more weapons on the boat that they were forced to bail out of and swim away before it got exploded?
I'm saying that a boat that comes with an invisibility system, turret-mounted miniguns, and some kind of crazy, like, radar, like sensors that can tell when you have been detected, probably has a locker for guns. But when it gets blown up and you have to bail out real quick, you may not get the chance to take them.
So you take the sidearm that you had
strapped to your leg.
Oh, okay.
Just on your person at all times.
Isn't that kind of the whole purpose of the sidearm?
To keep it on your side? Yeah.
That is exactly how they work. And might be why you would show up at an assault group with just that.
And you're saying that maybe the reason they didn't immediately kill some soldiers and take their superior weapons is because they didn't want to set off any alarms that they were there yet or had survived?
It might, in fact, be the case, as they were trying to still be sneaky.
I'm still going to say they had the superior weapons attached to the ends of their arms, because this is a fighting movie, and everyone knows guns don't work in fighting movies. The ways of the fist are stronger.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of if any character is actually really put down by a gun.
Several of the, like, military people on both sides, in M. Bison's army and in the Allied Nations task force.
So people who don't really matter.
If you had a name, you were invincible.
From a gun.
Yes.
Maybe that's what ticked off M. Bison, that Guile was alive. It's like, someone shot him. That's impossible. This is a fighting movie. We punch each other to death. He is still alive. Nobody punched him to death.
Get over there. Start punching him in the face. Fix this.
Find that corpse. Punch it. He learned it by beating dead horses.
All right.
All right. Last plot hole is... Let me face ID. All right. So, the last plot hole. The most important plot hole, because it is number one. Bison's life support. So, M. Bison and something Guile, I don't know his name. I can't be bothered to remember it. They have a fist fight, and Guile punches Bison so hard he flies through the air and lands on a computer console running the base, I guess? I'm not 100% sure. It ends up killing M. Bison, but lucky for Bison, he has a life support system built right into his suit. But how? Why? So it involves a three-stage process of CPR, where compressions work in reverse for some strange reason, followed by an electrical jolt to the heart, and the injection of adrenaline directly into the heart. It doesn't make much medical sense. So, what's up with his suit?
Well, I mean, if it doesn't work to bring him back to life, it's not like he lost anything.
And we will admit that this is a man who is well prepared, because he had the whole, like, earlier he had the poison gas in his room, but he built a safe room in his room so that he could turn on the poison gas if somebody were to try and kill him in his own room.
And then he could watch them as they get knocked out.
So he built the resuscitation system, and as far as the, like, compressions working in reverse, we see the suit expanding. But what we don't see is that we have to have...
You can't expand in one direction alone?
You can't expand in one direction alone. And even if the suit, like, even if his suit expands, it comes to a certain point where it stops, and then it has to start putting pressure on the thing inside it.
So the suit inflates to apply compression to the person.
To the body
inside. Releases and then compresses again, which is what we see happens.
Yes. And then have there be an electrical jolt? Sure, there's absolutely. As far as the adrenaline directly into the heart, I don't know whether or not it was directly into the heart or if it was just a computer graphic showing that there was adrenaline being applied.
I feel like it's the computer graphic. I think... the doctor would have been telling M. Bison that's not how it actually works. And M. Bison's like, no, I want to see the image. I want my enemies to see the image so they know they are dead.
Because, yeah, we don't actually see a giant needle stick into his body and go into his heart. We just see the computer monitor that tells us this is what is happening. And so that's, I think that's how it works.
Yeah, the display might not be accurate to the full systems going on.
Yeah. We know that there's some janky science going on. What with the giant Gatorade colored bags of
mutagen.
Yeah.
And plasma.
And anaerobic plasma.
So, obviously strange science is going on there.
But we don't question that. And, I mean, no one bothers to question his electromagnetic boots and gloves.
And levitating, like, flying thing?
No, look, it's just his power. He's breaking the science barrier between what is real and what he makes up and it will become real, because the scientists have to do what he says or they die.
It's just like how his bison bucks are going to be worth money after he takes over.
If you believe it hard enough and are scary enough to other people, they'll believe as long as you're around for you.
I think that's all the plot holes.
That's though. All the plot holes.
Quote unquote plot holes.
So for this movie, I think the general thought we agree on is that it is not objectively a good film. It is, however,
a really fun one.
So let's just talk about it now. But for the past couple video game movies, we've been talking about, would we want to keep this on a desert island? Like, if we had to watch this, like,
Which of the terrible video game movies would you take to the desert island? I'd take this one over the other ones.
The Mario Brothers? Or?
Yeah, definitely over Mario Brothers, over Rampage. This one made me chuckle and laugh. And it wasn't always at the movie. Like, they were aware that they were making the joke. Like, you laugh with this movie as much as you laugh at it.
It understood what it was. A silly video game movie.
Now, maybe if I was super into the lore of Street Fighter, I might be more upset. But I'm not. So, I don't really see how any of these characters are bad in comparison.
So, do you guys happen to know when the Street Fighter lore was actually, like, made? I know they have their intro setting, or their intro cutscene in the game, and, like, if you win the tournament, their ending, like, blurb or whatever. But
they'll always have, like, they would always have, like, the little paragraph that would tell you why this character is fighting.
In, like, the pamphlet of the game or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think also on select screens on a lot of arcades, you learn a bit about characters.
Because I'm just trying to remember. So, Street Fighter 2 also had spawned an anime. I don't know when the anime came out, though. I think it was 1998, if I remember, like, from research just about Street Fighter in general. But I'm not sure. It was a big thing in Japan, where, you know, Capcom is based.
I mean, the characters are probably more accurate, looking at the very least.
Probably. I mean, in this movie, Guile didn't have the, instead of a buzz cut, straight cut, whatever. Or, no, it's called a high top. He has the, plateau cut or something? Like, his hair's supposed to shoot out to the sides, like.
Like, it doesn't just go up, it goes out. It's ridiculous. And it's Street Fighter.
So,
I feel like Street Fighter 3 might be when they really start getting lore.
I'm not certain. I was never really big into fighting games either, so.
I mean, that's probably Super Smash Brothers is probably the one you got into most.
Yeah.
It's the same for me.
Yeah, same for me.
And, like, I understand those characters.
And there's not actually any lore, really, much at all.
I mean, the lore for the original Smash Brothers is they were figurine toys that were being forced to fight by a glove.
And that's still the story.
I mean, not now really. There's the evil light from outer space that makes the gloves.
And the opposite force that makes the anti-gloves.
And behind the space from, or the light from outer space, is some turtles riding an elephant, and there's turtles all the way down. That's how this works.
It's elephants riding turtle, a turtle, John. No, do not disrespect the great Atooine.
There are turtles all the way down.
Atooine. Ah, suck!
You disrespected him yourself.
I must commit the honorable Sudoku.
Well, you got all those numbers in a row and then died.
But yeah, this is a fun movie. Like, don't go in expecting amazing art.
Expect to see a man enjoying himself as the villain so much. He's chewing the scenery just left and right. Big old bites. And everyone else is along for the ride. And there's stuff happening. Like, this movie has... There's no question that there's no slow period in this film. Something is always happening. You won't be bored.
And it has, like, properly telegraphed cheesy one-liners. Because there are those moments where you watch it, and even if you haven't seen it before, they're halfway through the line, and you know how this line is going to end, because it's the only way it could.
So yeah, in short, would you guys should people watch this?
Yeah. You should give it at least one watch.
Yeah, it's fun.
Like, if you're into cheesy stuff, like, you could definitely have a riff party with your friends. Like, watch it with friends and enjoy, like, how bad it is.
Look at all of M. Bison's interesting furniture in his base. Ask questions about it. Was this made for the film? Did they find this at a garage sale?
Did they steal the prop off of some other set? Who knows? But, like, the hat stand where he keeps all of his hats. Like, honestly, I don't... Like, it's so strange. I think it had to have come from some kind of yard sale.
I mean, it's metal art, obviously made out of, like, tractor pieces.
And really, there is just a lot of stuff where you have all of the other characters who are just going. They, like, there's not really big overarching plans, or they've got a giant end game. But they definitely have I am doing this thing right now.
And I think this thing will help me get what I want. And you kind of know what people want. So I guess that's a good point.
Like, as far as plots go, it's not super deep, but you were never lost. There was never a moment where you were like, wait a minute, what's going on?
I mean, they could have always tried to turn this into Blade Runner for kids.
Blade Runner for kids.
But, you know, we saw how well that did 2 years earlier with the Super Mario Brother movie.
The Marios.
It's not a true Mario movie, so no true Scotsman, you know, all that jazz.
His name was literally Mario Mario. How more Mario can you be?
Well, you could be doing the Super Mario.
But that's an entirely different song and dance.
Definitely don't have the funds for those rights.
Do you have Bison Bucks?
Well, maybe.
Can you just print Bison Bucks?
I wonder how much that song is. Let's look.
Should we have The Last Laugh and create our own cryptocurrency called Bison Bucks?
That would be hilarious.
Invest in Bison Bucks, everyone. Within a period of time,
it'll be worth £5.
It'll be worth £5. One Bison Buck equals £5. And if we have to kidnap the Queen of England, well, that's a little out of our hands, because we are not M. Bison and are not that crazy, and our cryptocurrency is probably not even very cryptoed.
Plus, I think at time of recording, there's still travel bans right now.
Listen, John, if you really want to sell people on this crypto thing, you got to tell them about the blockchain technology.
What if we use the blockchain, but the blocks are blocking within Street Fighter? Like, you have to find the next block. You have to find it through combos in Street Fighter.
That's how
the mining... Is this just like Tetris meets Street Fighter here? I've seen weirder game combos.
Anything else we want to talk about?
I don't know.
I mean, we do need to talk...
Do we need to talk about skulls?
The scrolls?
Skulls. Skulls. You Kroll? Know?
Have you let Kroll into your life?
Like a skeleton? Like a skull?
So there's the moment in the film where M. Bison is talking about why he wants to create a genetically perfect super soldier.
For peace.
Not for himself, or for war, or for world domination, but for the good of humanity, to bring about world peace. And as he's saying this, he's walking around in his red leather suit with his cape held up with two skull pins and a giant skull with wings on his hat.
And, you know, here's the thing. That made us think, you know what? M. Bison is just trying to tell the world, you know what unites all of humanity?
Everyone has a skeleton inside.
No matter what's on the outside, we're all bones on the inside. That's what unites us. He's just trying to bring out so everyone can see that deep down, we're all the same.
I thought we were all nervy octopus monsters inside of a calcium mech suit.
Exactly.
M. Bison was just ahead of the internet.
Yeah, or, you know, we could also tie this back to Futurama, even though this technically came first. But M. Bison just wants to show everyone his peaceful ways, by force if necessary.
If there's world domination and he controls everything, there'll be peace because he won't let anyone fight except for hand-to-hand and with him.
Authorized honorable combat.
It's all he really wants. He just wants to be in the tournament. Let him be in a tournament, all right, guys?
He just wants to start a giant street fighting tournament.
It's all he ever really wanted. But if you don't have a skeleton and feel like you're left out by M. Bison, leave us a like on Facebook and comment on this episode.
Or, in 280 characters or less, let us know how you would spend your blockchain mined bison bucks.
How do you spend your bison bucks stimulus?
Or, if you have a plan for world domination that won't fit on Twitter, you can send it to us at plotsbacklepodcast@gmail.com.
I'm going to do the Twitter one over. I forgot to give our Twitter.
And I just want to thank our patrons for paying us in backed currency and not bison bucks. Bison bucks do not pay for equipment, and they don't keep us going. But you guys do.
They don't rent very many movies.
If you were in a hostage pit, we would send Jean-Claude Van Damme to rescue you using a stealth boat.
Maybe not now.
That we thought was going to go underwater because we hadn't seen this movie before, and it looks like it's supposed to be a submarine mix, and then it doesn't go underwater and just turns invisible, and that was actually pretty funny.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, guys, what'd your awesome combo be? I mean, that's the main thing about Street Fighter.
Is your combo?
Yeah, the combo.
Your incredibly difficult combo.
Mm-hmm. You know, quarterback slash...
I'd probably sneeze. Is.
Hey, listen, we don't do extreme sneezing here.
You haven't risky been around there. Me when I've sneezed, apparently.
And we want to make sure the microphones are off before then, because we still want to have ears at the end of it.